exploring long-term processes, process-based art, and its experience. So there's going to be a whole range. We hope you can join us for many of them. They're going to be on Mondays and Thursdays. And again, you can pick up a schedule upstairs or they're listed online. Maybe some of you have read and decided already which ones are of interest to you. But I think they're going to be very exciting and I'm going to go to as many as I can. So as part of that, we really want this to be not a lecture. We want it to be a conversation and to be experiential. And so each one of these will have those components and aspects. I don't know how well the first experiential part of what I've done for you today is going to work, but I handed out the survey more for you as individuals to be thinking about your specific reactions to very, very basic issues of time. And so I thought I'd throw some simple questions down there and put some dates on there to have us think about the topic that we're going to wrestle with today. And one of you already said, I think astutely and humorously, the main question I should have had on there is about time and the question of how we don't have enough of it. So we will talk today about what time means as it's constructed and imagined by four different artists and composers. They are, of course, Ann Kawara, Alighiero Boetti, Yoko Ono, and a little bit of John Cage thrown in for good measure, and he should be in there. And what I want us really to be thinking about are the issues of duration and time in its specific sense and in its more general sense are conventions of time, but how these particular artists and many and composers are grappling with these issues, exploring it, using time almost as a sort of plastic form in different ways. Now, we already know that our brown bag talks, and I sort of jokingly put that on your survey, how long should brown bag lectures or conversations last? And the answer would be 45 minutes, but we don't even have that much time now because we've already started. So I'm going to try to be very cognizant of time as I'm trying to have us discuss four different artists. And you can imagine that we're not going to necessarily get into great detail about any of their projects, but I want to use them to get us to think about, just like hopefully the survey is getting you to start to think about temporality. And we'll dive into what that means. And we're going to start with this work. Maybe we can lower the lights just a little bit. Sorry. And actually, let me start by asking you if anybody wants to share. The survey itself has to do with specific dates and a notion of temporality. Right? How long do we like to be somewhere? What satisfies us? What is the condition of an art project or an installation or a musical performance, right? Or a brown bag, for instance. For number two of the duration, to be satisfying, a musical performance or concert should last around how long? I just want to get a sense, and we'll get back to this. Who put down 5 minutes? Don't be shy. Or who put down a thought in their head? Who put down 1 hour? Okay. Who put down 1.5 hours? Great. And who thinks it really depends? Okay, probably everybody. So, you were cut and dry and you were answering the questions, but we'll sort of circle around that, right? Let's talk about the specific dates down below, and maybe we'll get back to the notion of duration through these questions. And it wasn't meant to be a test, but it's meant to make you think about what dates resonate for you and why we choose certain dates or think that they're important. And we'll think about this in different ways. But does anybody have a sense of what November 22nd, 1963 might be? Kennedy's assassination, JFK's assassination. So that is a date that often resonates for us, often death dates, tragedies, things like that. And you might not know it, but you might think, okay, it's something that happened in the 60s and you can maybe figure that out. Perhaps a more, definitely more exciting thing happened around July 20th, 1969.
Woodstock.
What is it?
Woodstock.
Woodstock. Woodstock might have happened around then. And actually, John Cage's 433 that we'll talk about was first performed at Woodstock. This particular date is probably, but again, dates resonate for us in different ways. And we think the year, 1969 and Woodstock. July 20th was the landing on the moon of that year. But I really like also that different associations, different ideas are coming up. And that should be. You know, if you weren't in the United States during that moon landing, you might have a different association with that date. Or for any reason, if you are in the United States, you might have different associations. That's one day in your life if you were living then. You know, and maybe exciting things happen, maybe things, you know, that were banal. It was just another day in your life. It's a date. August 28th, 1970. Does anybody know what that is? It was a very, very, very important date. Anybody? I'm kidding. I was born. It was important to me. It's one of the most important dates in my timeline is August 28th, 1970. But I threw that in because it certainly has relevance to me and my mom and my family, but may or may not have any relevance to you. Or maybe the date does. Maybe you know somebody who was born on August 28th, but not 1970, or something happened to you in that day. We were just going over the most important date on the list is my birthday. But all kidding aside, and again, I put it next to... or just before another date that probably resonates for many of us in here, right? September 11th. Oh, I wrote 2011. That should be 2001. I'm sorry. That is a typo. But that's an anniversary, of course, of that. So we'll leave it at 2011, but that's the 10th anniversary of the tragic events on September 11th. And, of course, now we, you know, say 9/11, and we have different associations with that. July 4th, 2076. What's that? Right, 300 years. And so we know that that's going to happen in the future, and we know that that's the signing of the Declaration and the 300th anniversary of that. So we can even think in the future and count dates and all of that. So we've gone through that, but I just wanted us to get in the mood of thinking about dates, and some more interesting and, you know, tragic or historic events. Lots of dates are perhaps important to individuals among us. But we're going to think about two artists who specifically treat dates and have us think about that. Did anybody write down a date or think a date to put on the back? No, nobody's willing to go that far. You did. Jennifer. Nope. I like how you wrote it in horizontal though. Yeah, what does it say? I wondered if somebody would do that, and it's actually 3, if you look at it, 3, 11, 13, you know, 13, it's kind of auspicious considering what we're talking about. Okay, so you put today. Thank you. Did anybody else think maybe they would put down today? All right, so we're going to get into more of the conceptual art, but I'm glad that you did that, and it's to say, hey, we're all here together today. If you write that down, it's a record of today, and that relates very much to some of the projects we're going to be thinking about. Okay, maybe it's banal. We'll find out. Maybe not after this talk. So thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, so we do see a date up here, and I'm not going to play any more games about, you know, what date this is, you know, try to figure this out. I have a friend who was born on December 12th. This is Ellen Grenley's birthday, so she always, you know, says this is her date picture. But the point is, and let's jump into this project, maybe you're aware of this artist or not. Does this look familiar to you in terms of a format? Some of you maybe. This is the artist On Kawara. And this particular work from this series is at MoMA, and sometimes we show it. But we're going to be talking about On Kawara, a Japanese artist, he's still alive, a project that he undertook. And this does really fit in with art in the long view. And it's very much based in dates. So this artist creates a painting every day. Or if he doesn't finish the painting in that 24-hour period, there is no painting from that day. But it's a project that he started on this day, on January 4th, 1966. And again, this may be something that appeals to you or not, and may be familiar to you. In fact, On Kawara's art is often something that draws a lot of ire when I take people around the galleries. It's not up right now, but on the fourth floor, people look at this and say, well, what is this about? You know, why has he done this? Well, it's part of a sort of conceptual idea that On Kawara had. It is related to many projects he was working on in the 1960s. And he hit upon the idea of making a painting. He uses 8 different formats, but basically they're horizontal, so they can be different sizes and dimensions, but he sticks to those 8. And he gives us, you know, this monochrome. They're often black, but often you may not realize it, but there are colors in the embedded in the black paint. This is not, you're looking at me and you're absolutely right. This is a blue picture. So he does sometimes use other colors. But what he does is hand write, hand paint the numbers. They may look stenciled. They're not. And he does the date for that day. Just like Jennifer was sharing, today is March 13th, and I didn't even ask you quite how you wrote that, but so January abbreviated for 1966. It's the first one. He started it in New York, and so I assume, although I didn't check, that there's a January 5th and so on and so forth. There were only 241 of these pictures, and originally he called them date pictures, but now they're known as part of the Today series because they're done today and each and every day that he gets to it. So it is an ongoing process. He gives himself a system, only these eight formats. Most of them, again, are black, but, you know, they have white writing, whatever the color underneath is. And he puts them, generally speaking, in a box with a newspaper, and I'll show you an example of that. But it's been an ongoing process. He will continue this until he dies. So that will be the last one. Here's another one that he clearly, you know, did after the first one. He's not ironic about the dates. The dates are what they are. And that determines the picture. This one happens to be at Dia Beacon, so you can go and check it out. And again, we have several at MoMA. So in terms of thinking about this, this process, and let me show you one of the newspapers. And I should also say one of the conditions. So the concept is to set these conditions up to process and think through time and existence, right? This is a newspaper that lines the box. It's a newspaper from whatever city and country he is from at that time. So if he travels and he's in a city in Japan, the newspaper will come from that. By the way, he did do one on the day that that men landed on the moon. And so the newspaper reads with that. But does every day have something as significant as that? No. So whatever newspaper is, whatever the news is, that's in the box, and the painting goes in it when it's not being shown. And I should say the curators get to decide whether they show the newspaper along with it or not. Right? Does it feel differently, and I do want to ask this as a question, if you see lots of date paintings, and here's an installation, for instance, and I'm going to move over and just show you. You can see that some of these are red, and again, we saw the blue one there, right? Does it change anything about them for you? And I know we have lights off. Because I want us to think about this, particularly as we talk about other artistic practices. The sort of value of duration of process. I mean, the fact that he started this in 1966 and it's ongoing, does that give more credence to it than if, for instance, he'd just done it for a year and said, I'm just doing this for a year? Right? Maybe yes, maybe no. Then saying maybe, right? And again, I want us to grapple with some of the basic things that these artists are addressing or creating or engaging with in terms of their process. I also wonder, and this was up for sale, I believe it entered into a private collection, but it was up for sale when it was shown at the Zwerner Gallery. But again, this is the first one, right? Now, he hasn't died, so we don't get the last one. Do you think the first one is more valuable than anything else? Who says yes? Maybe. I mean, wouldn't you want the start of something, maybe? It was like the first idea and he got it down? I don't know. What about the last one? I mean, after an artist dies, their art is valued. I mean, that is the end. There's no more. Yeah.
Well, I guess
please.
It's like the first and the last, but that's an interesting idea in itself and why that's important to me or to anybody else.
Absolutely.
And also seeing these dates, you say, oh my God, 1966, that was so long ago. So
absolutely, and we're going to get really uncomfortable today. We're going to, and you know, hopefully ecstatic as well. But I think conceptual art often, and particularly something like this, can make us uncomfortable. It can make us think about a lot of different issues. Yes.
Conceptual art is something which does not, we think
does he keep going every day,
Okay, so conceptual art, I think, can have many meaning, but sometimes conceptual art can be very ephemeral or a one-off. For On Kawara, this is a project that is sustained. So again, if he gets up in the morning and he's traveling or he has a toothache, you know, and he doesn't get a painting made for that particular day, there is no two-day picture for that day. But this is an ongoing project that happens every day. He addresses it. I'm making one today or I'm not, but I'm going to try to make one every single day until I die. And that's when the series stops. I'm not going to decide I'm too old and in 2014, just forget it, I'm not going to make one. So he says this is a long-term project, which has no end, right? Yeah. So, you know, I just want to sort of to think about what that might mean and also to share your ideas that this brings up. It's different every day. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So it's different every day. It's not going to be rainbow colors or anything like that. But every day, it's his brushstroke. It is a statement of his existence, not just, you know, a date, but that he touched it, that he created it. Even if it looks streamlined, it's hand done. Yes. What's interesting to you are the dates that are missing. Isn't that interesting? So that becomes part of the project too. I was bored. I mean, I just couldn't do one. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm bored. Why didn't he paint on that day? Is that, you know, and again, we may not come to a collective, you know, feeling about this, and I'm not trying to get that, but, you know, that may ring a bell where you think, wow, maybe they're not that exciting, especially I don't know all these dates, but isn't it interesting to think about why he didn't get one done that day? Was he flying? Was he, you know, was he just couldn't do it? He was bored. He was lazy. He you know, had something going on that day. That's the absence. The negative space, so to speak, the absence in the whole process is a statement or expresses something. Absolutely, absolutely. And how different is that in terms of thinking about art than much earlier art processes? We don't think so much about, you know, Mona Lisa is not painted every day, or, you know, Leonardo da Vinci doesn't set up a process like this. This is a very 20th century into 21st century process. Absolutely. I would love to know, too, about some of these. And, you know, I don't think he really tells us. I think that's part of the life thing. He wants to say it's very philosophical, but it's also just about my life. And
it's interesting if he wrote a book that was published after he's gone, saying...
Filling us in.
What was going on in those days.
Who wants to read that book? I would love to. And just to say, because we're only, you know, this is his major project that he's often associated with, and again, these are all sold separately. I sound like a TV commercial, but they're all sold separately so that, you know, you can't necessarily get the first and the last, or you can't get a whole group, and that's, I think, part of the fun as well, is the sort of individuality and some of the gaps. Yes, jump in.
Do you know how many days he missed in a year?
I don't. I just know for the first year that he only did 241. So that indicates to me that there are several days that there aren't. I'm sure somebody has chronicled it. He also did write books, but not about what he left out. He wrote books where he typed in a million years. So literally you can see year after year after year, just dates. So, you know, he's very interested in time and what it means and what it doesn't mean or what it can't show us. So I'm going to, I think... you know, keep moving us forward, but I want to have us be thinking about On Kawara and this example that he provides for us, and again, this sort of long view and the notion of a specificity of date, but within a practice that continues and continues to inform the meaning of the art. And again, thinking about our reaction if we see a number of these versus just one. Let me ask before we move on, do you think if you saw one, right, and just, you know, close off the other one there, any which one, do you think that you would feel that there was probably more significance if you didn't know his project and you saw a big painting that said July 16th, 1969? Right? So, again, I just want us to have a sense of our own reflection upon these, whether it's frustration or the value that we sort of imbue these things with, or the mystery or lack thereof as we would encounter them. And I'm not going to talk too much about this series, but a number of conceptual artists use the mail and use postal systems as a way of also declaring their existence. So this was part of Ankhawara's, in related series, but it's not his today paintings. He started sending telegrams to people. I got up. And I thank you all for getting up and coming here today. But you probably didn't send telegrams telling people that. But it's a way of sort of affirming, at least with one other individual, sending out the mail, I got up, I did this. In a certain way, the date pictures or the Today series acts in that way as well. I want to have us talk about Alighiero Boetti. And I wrote Alighiero e Boetti in the title. Sometimes I use the E, sometimes I don't. Same with him. He was an artist who sometimes put an and in the middle of his name. And here we see a photomontage postcard, which is a double portrait of this artist, Boetti. And I want to see a show of hands. Did people go to the Boetti show? Did you know about the Boetti show? Okay. And if you did, great. If not, very, very interesting figure who delves into these same issues that we're talking about in his own way. And he's constantly, he's passed on now. He dies in 1984. But throughout the 60s and 70s until his death in 84, he was very, very interested in dualities, including specifics, say a specific date, or the notion of duration. So some of his projects were very finite, and some of them went on and on. And again, even in his photomontage here, we see some of the absurdity and the duality, right? It's two pictures of the same person. An impossibility, temporally or otherwise. But I want us to dive into a related work, a piece he did in bronze, and then he had it woven by women in Afghanistan. So looking at these dates, ring any bells, right? That won't be my refrain all throughout the talk. Okay, so the 16th, oh, and it's in Italian, right? And in fact, Ankhawara himself, for his date pictures, would utilize the numeration and however dates were written in that country. So if he's in Europe, he's going to write the number first like this, and then the month. So he would, emulate wherever he was. But this is Alighiero Boetti, this Italian conceptual artist. And these are actually brass plaques, so the color looks a little funny. But imagine the notion of engraving, right? This is permanent. And so he's made these dates permanent. And these dates are important to him, right? And neither one of them have happened yet, have they? So we're talking about that sort of future realm and intemporality. So the 16th of December to 2040 and the 11th of July 2023. So the 11th of July 2023 is when Boetti predicted his death. Now, I told you that he died in 1984, so he didn't make it, right? How unusual is that to sort of predict your death and engrave it into brass? Or how absurd, right? Or maybe he was, it's an affirmation. Maybe he wanted to live that long, right? The 16th of December, and he saw these as length, 2040 is 100 years from his birth. Right, so he was born on the 16th of December, 1940, right? And I sort of want to ask us, what dates do we tend to celebrate? So I mentioned deaths, tragedies. What else do we celebrate? Birthdays? Anniversaries, right? And in that, it's a marking of time, it's a marking of a year. And, culturally there might be some differences, but particularly here, we tend to, and in other cultures as well, mark these anniversaries, these momentous occasions, things that have happened in the past. And one of the things that Boetti was very cognizant of was the idea that we celebrate for instance, famous figures and heroes. Now, none of the dates that I pulled, my birthday doesn't really count at all, but famous people, we celebrate, we have, you know, big parties, we do, it's a great marketing thing, right? But we tend to have festivals, you know, Beethoven's 180th birthday or something, right? So this is 100 years from when he was born, and he was saying, we celebrate artists, and we do it usually in 25 years, 50 years, 100-year increments, right? So what do you think about that? Do you think he's trying to be absurd? Do you think he's trying to be egotistical about this? Maybe not. And I don't have an answer for this.
Hope.
Okay, hope. Yeah, and we definitely will. He just had a retrospective, right? But he's definitely putting that in there and sort of announcing something about how we tend to look at dates. But of course, for him, you know, dates are in some ways text. They're plastic. They're sort of movable and exchangeable. And this may be harder to read, but if you did see the Boetti show, you might have seen that he took those plaques, or basically, you know, drawings from them, just with the dates, and handed them over to women in Afghanistan and said, please embroider this in whatever way you see fit, right? What happens to those dates? They what? Okay, so they're memorialized. Are they as permanent as, you know, you mentioned conceptual art as in the back as more fleeting, perhaps. But so it is, I mean, it's embroidered, it's there to stay, but almost illegible, right? But it is memorialized and set into this embroidery. But it's also transformed, isn't it, into a very different medium than we're used to. I think in Western culture, and I am overgeneralizing here, but mostly we don't tend to put something like that on a pillow, right? Or a pillow cover. Maybe on a wall hanging, right? Where do we memorialize things?
Yeah. Engraving in the glass, this is more of like a conventional way that a whole society would memorialize or basically, because it's like a monument. It could be a picture building or a sculpture or something. But these dates are about his personal life. They're not about fixing dates that are significant to everyone.
Okay.
It's significant that they're embroidered because this is like the domestic realm. So he's kind of celebrating like fixing dates that are relevant to him in a medium that's more like intimate and domestic versus like a public fixing of dates.
Right. And I hope everybody heard that. So absolutely, this is a much more domestic sensibility of this. These are dates that are personal to him. Oftentimes we memorialize, I mean, whether it comes down to money, who is paying for something, but also the fact that it's going to be permanent. It's for all of time. There are things that, you know, you're going to put them into a building or a foundation stone or something like that, but it's usually something much more historic or public or shared. Right? It's collective rather than when he thinks he's going to die, which isn't, right? Or the 100th anniversary of his birth, which may or may not even have any relevance. I mean, he picked those dates, you know, decades ago, before he died in the 1980s, you know, or actually earlier than that. This was created in 1971. So this is before his art has even taken off and he's made any money. So it's hopeful, but it's also rather private. And that's also a way of sort of playing with these boundaries and getting us to think about or getting people to think about artistic practice and what it means and you know, the public versus private or the domestic versus the large-scale, monumental, and particularly westernized conception of recording history. And as he says, and I think this is a beautiful quote, do you know why dates are so important? Because if you write, say, 1970 on a wall, it seems like absolutely nothing. But in 30 years' time, dates have this beauty. The more time passes, the more beautiful they become. Do we think that's true? Maybe yes, maybe no. I didn't put in 1970 just because it's my birthday, but I love that he put that in. But think about this. He dies 14 years later. He didn't even make that 30 years. But, you know, yes, he's a conceptual artist, but maybe our answer shouldn't be yes or no. And I just want us to think about this. We don't have to keep reflecting on it, but this idea of what do dates mean to us? And when time passes, does it make it more special about certain things? You know, maybe Boetti's death or birth date or, you know, Rodin's sculpture is you know, 150 years old, or whatever it is, when time passes, does that make things more special?
Well, they become historic.
They become historic, okay. Right? Becomes antique whether you like it or not. It becomes historic, absolutely. But I think he's playing with that notion. And I'm just going to mention this. This was one of his works in the show, Me Sunbathing in Turin on January 19th, 1969. And, of course, you're not going to sunbathe in Turin. This is concrete balls that he formed and tried to show himself sort of relaxing. But to me, one of the most interesting things is that he dates it. You know, you don't usually find portraits, me on July 6th, me on, you know, of course, it's the middle of the winter, not even, you know, a warm season. But this idea of picking a date seems to be particularly interesting to him. Nothing happened on January 19th, and in fact, he wasn't sunbathing, but he's putting that in there. One more work that I just want to mention is this work, and those of us who got to see the show looked at this thing, and I'll tell you what it is if you didn't get to experience it, and none of us got to experience it in its full glory, and Heather's laughing, because this is called The Annual Lamp, and ostensibly, it goes off. On, I should say. It does its thing. It goes on for 11 seconds a year. So we don't know if in the 3 months that we were showing it, it went off. Nobody saw it. It is mechanical. I mean, it is has some kind of, you know, it's electricity and all of that. It's this plinth, and you can see the light bulb in there. But this idea, of course, is pretty absurd. A finite time. How about 11 seconds? Would you like it if it went off more? But what is the preciousness attached to that? Right? I mean, it's kind of mysterious. Kind of makes it special. For anybody who just came in, feel free to sit down. We're just looking at a lamp that goes off every 11 seconds per year. So again, we're talking about the long view, but I want us to think about this sort of short duration, a specific date or, you know, this moment that it only exists for that moment, or does it exist without that? What if he just said this is lamp? Would you be as interested or curious?
Well, there's a difference between lamp and light.
Okay.
So the light is only...
The light. Okay, so the light only goes on.
The lamp is eternal.
Okay, the lamp is eternal. Okay. And I'll just let it... I'll let it be there. It's not going to go on. but I want to dive quickly into the second or further part of our discussion. With John Cage, and I want to just play a teeny bit of his incredibly famous and important score, and I'm going to see if I can get this to go on quickly. I'm seeing, and I'm fully aware that I'm wasting time by, but not by showing Cage. Okay. It's not stuck, by the way. I checked. It's a little bit dark in here, but there's a head moving ever so slightly, and I checked it this morning. Thank you. and the sound isn't turned off. So with due respect to John Cage and David Tudor, who's playing the piano, I'm going to speak over it a little bit just for sake of time, because I'm running out of it. But for those who need a little reminder about 4-3-3, this is John Cage creating essentially a composition of silence. And he wasn't trying to be absolutely absurd. He was trying to do something serious, but not so serious. He was involved in Buddhist teachings and I Ching and notions of chance. And for several years, he had been very interested in the notions of what music is, what sound is, and what silence is, and the temporality of all of those things, the way in which they could be combined or utilized. And so he ended up writing a composition for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. And the first production was in 1952. And it was performed. There are actually four different versions of the score after that, and MoMA has one copy. But basically, it is about the silence and the ambient noise, which I'm defeating by talking. But the idea that if it's completely silent, you're still going to hear the rustling and the uncomfortability, perhaps, or just the wrestling. We all move. We all make noise. And so instead of David Tudor playing and hearing that, the score becomes whatever you experience as an audience, for 4 minutes and 33 seconds, right? So what is the structure? Time, right? It's the only thing we have. It's the only thing, as he would say, or temporality, that brings sound and music together. They're both, you know, related to that. So I'm going to say goodbye to David Tudor, but you can YouTube this. I don't know why it's 5 minutes and 41 seconds, by the way, but the performance is actually 4:33. And I'm gonna. Basically, Chance and I Ching, and he said that he wanted to. He'd been talking about it in lectures. Oh, and you can jump in if you wanted to. Go ahead. No, please. Go ahead. No, please. Tell me. Tell me if you know a little bit more, because I've been trying to look into it. No, help us out, please. Please. Okay. Well, for. Clearly, he has something more to add, but I've been trying to look into this. I'm not a major Cage scholar, but he had talked about wanting to do something like this for 3 or 4 minutes, and but I think maybe he knows something more specific, and I would love for him to share with us. I'm going to put up our PowerPoint again. I would really love if you jump in and illuminate, even correct me. Are you sure? Because I think it would be helpful. Okay, I'm not going to belabor that anymore. Yes, please. He's got a question. Yes. Or you have a question.
Well, I was just going to say about this other piece that I think is happening right now.
Okay, please share that with us.
It's like a composition / installation
that
lasts for 1,000 years.
Okay. Perfect. So his composition lasts for 1,000 years. Great. And it's going on
somewhere in Germany.
Fabulous. So that's exactly what we're talking about, sort of negotiating the very specific structure, and then the notion of a sort of flip side of that, an opposite coin, but linked to it, this idea of something ongoing. Okay, so that composition won't be done for 1,000 years. So we couldn't finish it. It won't be finished. This notion of a duration that extends past us. Absolutely. So again, some of these projects are but a part of, even if some of them are the most famous projects of these artists, part of a different type of thinking, or how people have conceived of it, the works or their projects after the death of the artist. And I just put up this quote here with John Cage: of the four characteristics of the material of music, duration, that is time length, is the most fundamental. Silence cannot be heard in terms of pitch or harmony, it's heard in terms of time length. And I love this notion of something going on for 1,000 years. And again, that's really going to fit into the discussion that's ongoing in these art and the long view. The question of, does something have to finish right? And I'm sorry we didn't get to experience all of that. But this idea, when I asked you, should a musical performance be 5 minutes, an hour and a half? We're certainly used to some sort of segments. Can it be 1,000 years? I just went to a performance here at MoMA of a Morton Feldman piece. And, of course, Morton Feldman and John Cage were very good friends and inspiring each other during this time. And it went on for an hour, you know, one voice. And so this question of what our expectations are or what we're open to. And I just want quickly to give us a taste of Yoko Ono and finish on Yoko Ono. Again, each one of these could be a brown bag or a symposium. It's just to get a sort of taste of these ideas. So here's a picture of Yoko Ono performing her cut piece, which was in fact one of her early scores. And her first husband had been very good friends with John Cage, and there was a lot of interaction and discussion about creating instructions, very much related to the Fluxus artistic movement, and artists in New York and globally who were thinking about print materials, disseminating ideas, and again, scores or instructions that anybody could participate in. So this idea of doing one note a year, for instance, and or this idea of having anybody be able to repeat a score or an instruction, it's an opening up, a democratization, and a different type of conception of what art making is or music playing, and I use those terms very loosely, but that one could perform one of these scores, for instance, that Yoko Ono wrote. And here she is with John Lennon, and he worked on a further edition of this particular book called Grapefruit, and that's the first edition here, and we don't sell it in the store, but I got mine on Amazon. I think these are lovely. But Grapefruit was a collection of scores written in the 1960s, first collected around 64, and then republished around 1971. And again, we are just about out of time, but I wanted us to think about this continuation or this relation with an idea of temporality and duration. I don't know if you've encountered these types of Fluxus scores, or scores that instruct you to do things, some of them short, some of them long, some of them more poetic, some perhaps more absurd. This is one, for instance, that Yoko Ono wrote, and that's 1961. She wrote in winter, and you might consider them poems, but they're also doable. They allow you to perform the piece, and some of them are much more open-ended. Some of them, you know, two people, one person, anybody you want to, as many times as you want to. Keep laughing a week. But it's interesting that a lot of these scores have a sense of duration or time, right? They make us think about how often we're going to do it or how long, right? And I was actually going to have us read a few, but for lack of time, I will just stand here and read a couple. So another one, not laugh piece, is called Dawn Piece, like the morning. Dawn Piece. Take the first word that comes across your mind. Repeat the word until dawn. Yeah, that was 1963 winter, right? And she performed a number of these, but they're kind of, you know, thrown out like leaves in the world that people can pick up. I mean, they're in a book, but I just mean you can take one score and do it. In fact, we have a bunch of scores. You can take one on your way out. But what does it do to add that duration, right? Here, we'll do part of it. Dawn piece. Take the first word that comes across your mind. Are you okay with that part? Did anybody think of a word, or are you just going through motion? Okay, so, but what if I say repeat the word until dawn? Are you willing to do that? No. Okay? I thought so, right? I mean, and we go through all the motions. What if I told you 5 minutes? What if I told you three times, etc.? But, so there's a poetry and an absurdity, but I do think it gets us to think. But I think it's that duration there that kind of throws us off. Until the morning, all night long, until you die. And a lot of these have those. Time painting. Make a painting in which the color comes out only under a certain light at a certain time of day. Make it a very short time. So, duration. Making art, making paintings, doing things in the world. Some of them don't have duration. And I just want to share a beautiful one. It's called Shadow Piece. And I'm not going to make you all get up and do this, but think about if you did. And this is where I think some of the beauty in poetry really comes out. Some of them are very funny or absurd or explicit and are really meant to provoke us. They're not necessarily doable. Although you should feel free to go out and get an orchestra and, you know, go out into the woods and do, you know, there's lots that they're pretty hard to do. But this, shadow piece, whatever group you are or two people, put your shadows together until they become one. If you've ever tried it, it's actually really nice. But again, we're almost out of time and space here. I want to end on one more Yoko Ono score. And again, this is just meant to have us think about, you know, four composers and artists working in the postmodern period, tackling time and taking it on, creating works that perhaps challenge us or provoke us or confuse us or get us to think about our own lives in different ways. And again, I've given short shrift to all of them, but I want to end on this one. And I actually want us to do it. So I'm over, but I just want everybody. And I'm actually going to do something, I think, in the spirit of Yoko Ono. So if you'll indulge me. If you can hold the hand of somebody next to you, and if everybody could connect, we're not doing a circle, but I'm, again, after racing through all this, and as before you go out into your busy days, and this is part of her Let's Piece One. I want everybody in the city, now we're just apart here, but everybody in the city to think the word yes for 30 seconds. We're not going to do the second part, although that's up to you to go out into the world and do, all right? So let's think yes. However you want to do that, think yes for 30 seconds. Okay. How did that feel? Okay. So you can do it often. All right. But Mina, you can take that one wherever you want to. But thank you for being with me for 45 minutes.
I'm happy to hear comments, questions. We also have some various grapefruits if you feel like taking some. Thank you. But thank you for coming out today, and I hope that you'll come for the variety of art in the long view that we have coming up. See? You should. That's what I expected people to do.
I know, but when you did, I was like,
all right, I can get my birthday gift. Which day is it?
July 6th.
July 6th. My brother's is that day.
Oh, yeah. My dad's is
the Oh, my goodness. There you go. So,
right in a row?
Yes, right in a row.
You're absolutely right.
And it's for, and I'm not kidding, it's for lack of time in the sense that if I could get one more example, I didn't keep the time. But as a longer project, I would love to, and I would definitely incorporate that in. And it definitely impacts, you know, all of these people in terms of their thinking, their experience, their, you know, culture. But you're absolutely right. And so I kept it visual artist, but I thought paint should be brought in. So, but yes, it would broaden it in and better. Food for thought. Thank you so much.
Strategy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was thinking
it was
the survey.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't figure out the answer.
I think so. Yeah, it's just fascinating. Again,
you're doing a lot more.
but I think...
I think she's very much, building upon upon what we're doing. She's fascinating, very smart, very smart. My name's Larissa Baker. Yeah, I give a lot of the gallery talks in university. They change them all around, but I have a card if you... I have a website now.
Yeah, because I really enjoyed...
Oh, well, thank you so much.
...listening to you.
I enjoyed your comments as we were going along. Let me just find...